B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
All right, so let's get to the bottom of what's going on here with the Eagles, the Jim Schwartz thing, and I'm sure Sal has heard all the comments that Jim made today. He is, of course, the great Sal Palantonio, and he covers the NFL like nobody's business for ESPN. He's on the Comcast Business Hotline. Good afternoon, Sal.
Michael, it's been a rough couple days. Rough couple days, I'll tell you that.
Well, just how rough has it been?
Well, you know, let's go big picture, little picture, which I like to do with you.
Okay.
Big picture is, Mike, they had a shot to win the game.
Yeah.
They had a shot to win a game that nobody expected them to win.
Uh-huh.
They haven't won in Pittsburgh in 20 years.
Yep.
They're playing shorthanded at pretty much every position, and they had a shot to win the game. And it really came down, in my view, to two decisions by two coaches.
Okay.
Doug Peterson and Jim Schwartz. You know, Mikey, I've been married 42 years, okay? You know how you stay married 42 years? You have to learn three words. I screwed up. Right? It's actually five words. Plus six words.
You've been married for 42 years now? God bless you.
I know, really?
Man.
Yeah, I know. She could have killed me and been out by now.
That's impressive, man. 42. Like that.
Yeah. God love her. You know, absolutely. It's just a blessing. But listen. It's actually six words. I'm sorry, honey. I screwed up.
Uh-huh.
That's how you stay married for 42 years.
All right, so who screwed up?
So Jim Schwartz has to come out today and say, I'm sorry, we screwed up, and we'll make it better next time. And this all goes away.
So you didn't like what you heard today from him.
No, how could you possibly like it?
Well, all right, so
it's like when you ask the economics professor, and you know I'm using economics for a reason because he was an economics major at Georgetown.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, smart guy.
Super smart.
Uh-huh.
You can't be an economics major.
Yep.
Be one of the top people in your class at Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
Unless A, you got great SAT scores, and B, you're a super smart guy.
Yep.
So he's a super smart guy. We know that. So you got to be smart enough to just say, I screwed up.
So let I can. This is Tyrone. I want to play the thing again because there may
be.
Oh,
God.
But I want you to. I got it for our listening audience. I want to play it fresh here. And so, like, you react to it fresh. So here it is. Here he is explaining the coverage with Gary.
As far as being aggressive, we're trying to stop the first down right there. And that's what Nate's trying to do. So he sits down on that route because that's where the sticks are, and he goes over the top. There's probably different things we can do, but we're playing aggressive. We're trying to keep him out of field goal range right there. You know, they made us pay for that aggressiveness.
All right, so that was the wrong thing to say, evidently.
Well, you know, the first thing is Nate is not the ideal matchup against a guy who's burned you all day long. You know, they turned Chase Claypool into Jerry Rice. And if you go back, if people want to, and this is a shameless plug, but I have on my Instagram post, SalPal ESPN, the first touchdown that Claypool scored against Jalen Mills. Nobody could cover him, least of all a linebacker. So if you're going to sit down with him at the line of scrimmage, you know, maybe you've got to do it far more aggressively than they did it. And then you know he's going to get off the ball because he happens to be 6'4", 238. He's not 5'11", 196. He's a big young man who catches everything, and he's strong. So you know he's going to get off, and he's quicker than a linebacker. All right, so let's just say you're jamming him at the line of scrimmage with Nate. Then you immediately have to have help. Immediately. Not past the sticks, certainly. And you can't give him a free run into the end zone. You just have to say, listen, it didn't work out for us. We were down Darius Slay. He's out of the game. We tried this. It didn't work. In retrospect, in a critical juncture of the game, we probably shouldn't have done it.
So I get a bigger question here. The dynamics of what the, like, it looks to me like this defense coordinator has total autonomy. And he actually threw Doug under the bus a little bit, saying Doug is the guy that needs to call timeout. Doug said that at that point in time that he didn't want to use a timeout because he needed
Well, not only that. Let me call a timeout on this right here. Okay, not only that. You're inside the 15 seconds, and Ben Roethlisberger checked out of the play based on what he saw.
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, you know, I love Dougie P, but that's a pretty quick trigger that he's got to have to call a timeout. So Schwartz calls the defense, Ben changes the play, and Doug's got to see that and hear that Ben has changed the play and call a timeout. So I don't buy that. But, you know, Doug doesn't escape blame, in my view. Because the series before that led to the field goal, when they had control of the game and they were down by two, they had opportunities to just run the ball, run out the clock. They were in four down territory, four run plays gets them a first down. And then they have a much better shot at a field goal from a much shorter distance. Instead, he came out throwing three out of the four downs. They had a spread offense on the field. I looked at that and I said, that is where the game turned. And I believe, other than the Claypool play, which of course was tough to defend for a lot of reasons, Ben Smart, Claypool's playing out of his mind. You don't have Darius Slay on the field. But Doug had all of the bullets in the chamber when he was going for the game, the go-ahead field goal.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't use them. He threw the ball, and as a result, they had to kick a long field goal, which turned out to be the longest field goal in Heinz Field history.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because I agree with you on bad play calls that lead you into that fourth down. So at that point, at fourth down, what are you doing? Was that the wrong move to try to kick it?
Well, now you're backed up against the wall, right? So if you punt it, now everybody's saying, oh, we got Cincinnati all over again. That's probably playing back in his mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to punt it.
Right.
And it was a pretty long fourth down, if I remember. It wasn't fourth and one or fourth and two. I think it was fourth and
six. It was fourth and five.
Okay, fourth and five. Thank you. So fourth and five, you know, the offense had been playing very well. They had been moving the ball. In that particular case, I don't try the longest field goal in Heinz Field history and half. And
so you got to know that before you make that decision to kick the field goal, that the 53 is the max for whatever reason it is.
Not only are you kicking the longest field goal, you're kicking it into the wrong end zone. You're kicking it at the Allegheny River. And everybody, and I've covered a million games there, in good weather and bad, doesn't matter. Everybody knows late in the afternoon, the wind comes in from Allegheny River from that end of the stadium, and you don't try to kick a field goal there.
Mm. All right, last question. I want to ask you about Miles Sanders.
Nevertheless, he had the distance.
He did have the distance. Like I said, I didn't have a problem with it at the time because it turned out he did have the distance.
The leading up to it was the problem.
Yeah.
Like you could have put him in a better position. So Doug doesn't get off the hook, I don't think.
No
neither
question.
Schwartz, neither. I see, this is a game that really bothers me more than all of the other games this year. Because, you know, they have no business being in that spot. Carson Wentz played great. Do you know that Travis Fulgham had 10 catches in the game? Do you know that Nelson Aguilar has 10 catches all year out in Oakland?
Yeah.
They were the same number. When you look at Travis Fulgham, but by the way, it's so great they found a wide receiver.
Yeah,
yeah.
But hopefully they have.
Hopefully, yeah. I know we're not going to we're crossing the fingers. But you know he's catching everything, Mike. It's not a fluke. It's not.
He looks like he knows how to get open too. So
yeah, and he's got Godawana, right?
He does have that.
He wasn't picked in the first round. He went to Old Dominion. He was cut twice. He knows he can't be cut again, or, you know, you don't know what's going to happen to the young man. So he's got the Godawana, and now Carson's got a big, rangy guy who can get open. And Carson played out of his mind.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what's up this weekend. I don't know how I feel about this game. I don't know how do you feel quickly about this game coming up?
I think they win the game.
Oh my God! You think they win the game?
I think they win.
You gonna leave that nugget on the way out the door?
I think they win the game.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll figure it out. There's a big endorsement from Sal Powell. All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right, I'll talk to you.
There he is. Sal Powell. I think they win the game. All of a sudden, he drops that on us on the way out.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.